You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Mono Agapian. I was the guest on a previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing La Ronde. Today, my guest is Iffy Wadue, who improv fans might know from White Women doing improv and sketch. You might know him from stand-up. He even stand-up on the UCB show. And you know him as a writer on multiple projects, maybe even a gamer. go ahead and say hello to Iffy.
I like that you did still get that gamer in there. Like, that was, you know, jokingly.
I know you were joking, but like, you do game online,
true.
In a sense.
Yeah. With Geek and Sundry and Hyper RPG on Twitch. And that also came from improv. Improv, you know, lots of hidden opportunities. Like, I know like a lot of like improvisers like to openly joke about like, oh, you know, yeah, the improv makes so much money and improv makes them like, well, it doesn't make money performing at the theater, but it makes money when, you know, casting directors are calling you in for commercials because they know you're funny. It makes money when you get brought in to audition for TV shows, movie projects, and all these different projects. Like, that's where it pays off.
I agree. Yeah. I find it, for me, particularly, like, helpful, like, with writing. Of, like, I never, like, whereas, like, writing and structure kind of is intimidating to me. But once I'm writing a scene, I'm like, I've done a million improv scenes, so I'm not scared of writing this scene.
Yeah, and I remember the big, like, you know, like kerfluffle was when like the stand-ups kind of got more involved and they're like, what, we don't get paid? And then that was I think that was all New York, and it, maybe it's different in New York, but in LA you get like $10 for a set at the improv, and so it's like, I, you know, I'd rather get like free beer, like, because you don't get free beer when you do a club. Like, you get like $10 and that $10 probably goes to the beer you're buying at the improv or the store.
That's way more humiliating, being like waiting around for your $10 bill. That's humiliating. Like, you might as well just be pounding those PBRs and make your money that way.
I tell you, I drink way more than $10 in beer whenever I have a show at UCB. I'm getting my money's worth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have so many questions, but I'm going to try to go somewhat chronologically. We'll see if that happens. What brought you to UCB at the very start?
Were you
already doing stand-up at that point?
I was already doing improv. So I've been doing stand-up for 5 years, but I've been doing improv for almost like 12 years.
Yeah.
And like most, you know, this podcast has been going on for a while now. So with most like LA-based, have you guys had like an LA-based improviser on yet? And I don't know if they said this, but a lot of LA-based improvisers did Comedy Sports High School League.
Sure.
So you know what Comedy Sports is.
And I did it in North Carolina.
Oh, shit. Thank you. Okay. Because somebody was like, is it just the LA thing? I was like, no, I feel like it went beyond LA.
Yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big, weird thing, but it's a big thing.
Yeah. So, like, that's what I started. I actually started my senior year in high school because just ASB did a horrible job describing it. Like, it was always like, it's like if jocks did comedy. And I was like, I don't want to see that. And I'm not a jock. I can't do that. And then when they finally were like, no, it's like, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Boom. I was so in there. I couldn't wait to, I was like, okay, why didn't you say this before?
Yeah.
You know? So I did it my senior year, and what was cool is like the like head captain kind of like let me do almost so many different things because he knew that it was my only year to do it. So I was doing that, and then the teacher at the time had his own indie team in Orange County, and he thought I was pretty funny. So I took a sip of water. I'm very okay.
Quick sidebar.
So I did another podcast and I was listening back to it and I feel like you can hear my mouth smacking. So now I'm very self-conscious about where it's like, I gotta keep.
It's okay if your mouth smacks. That's your brand.
No, my brand is I got the silky mouth.
Okay.
So, I'm gonna have to have Zig delete that.
Here's what I'll say. You're in the middle of a brand crisis right now because you're trying to push that silky mouth is your brand.
Yeah, silky mouth. Yo, it's your boy, Silky Mouth.
Okay, so you were doing it. You were like, this was your last year to kind of do it. First and last year to do it.
Yeah, and so the teacher, he had his own indie team in Orange County. He brings me on because he thought it was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that and it just kind of got into this sense of regularity where it was just a part of my life. And then I listened to Donald Glover's WTF episode where he was like going down the list of black improvisers. Mm-hmm. And like, weirdly enough, I was expecting to hear my name, you know, I was like, and when I didn't hear it, that kind of put a fire under my ass where I was like, that's where I need to be. I need to be in UCB. And I knew of UCB 2 years earlier because like a few people on my team mentioned it. And I went straight to the UCB site to the frequently asked questions and like read how to perform here. And mm-hmm. it was like, you have to take classes. I was like, well, I've been doing improv for like 5 years. I don't mm-hmm. need classes. But what was cool though is I'm glad I did it when I did it versus then because like, you see, I mean, like, you know, no shade, but you see those people in your 101s if you remember that far. I feel mm-hmm. like we've both been doing it for a minute now.
Yeah.
But like those people who came in with an ego and they like casually dropped if they've done improv here or there. And so like you can tell they're really not digesting, you know, the form. And then they get to like 301, 401 and they're freaking out where it's like, I don't get game and all this. Like,
because
you're so busy. Just kind of feeling like you didn't have
exactly.
to do this, that like I felt like even though I did have like at the time almost 10 years under my belt when I started, I probably had like 7 under my belt. I learned so much still in 101 because there's such a difference between short form and long. I mean, it's completely different. It's completely different where
Saying you were present.
Yeah, I was present. I was enjoying it. It was the best part of my week because, like, it broke off from this monotonous, like, work from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Sometimes on Saturdays, I go to do improv and then rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
And now it's this new thing around all these creatives because, like, you know, doing improv in the OC, it was a lot of people's hobbies. So, like, everyone had a day job. But being around all these people who wanted to be actors, I think my buddy now, Jamie McCoon, he was currently in, like, The Walking Dead as one of Herschel's sons. And I was like,
oh, shit.
This is, and I've always wanted to act. So, like, it like, gave me life. Like, I feel a lot of people say that, you know, it gave me life.
That's amazing. And like, could you feel, so it's first of all, so cool that you were like actually in the classes. I know what you mean when people are like, some people shoot themselves in the foot when they're not just taking the class for what it is, as opposed to thinking of, I'm so funny, I've done this on a bigger scale. It's like, okay, well, you're missing out on what's happening today. But I wanted to ask, like, how have you seen your improv style evolve since doing stuff here at UCB? And then I want to dig into maybe like how you're, go ahead, and then I'll dig into how other stuff you've done has affected it.
Well, I feel like with me, I was always the joke guy, which is why I'm like I'm also a stand up. I was mm-hmm. also like, so like, I always was like these big, goofy characters, and like, you know, in short form that works. You only have like, you know, about a minute or two for a scene. So having these big characters enter, like, so I feel like my first like few years doing long form, I kind of suppressed that because I realized how much it can obstruct when you do that in long form. Like, you don't want to come out. So I kind of, and that's the, I feel like my first few years, I was a little more in my head about it, but I still would like find opportunities to be the funny. I always mm-hmm. found myself trying to be the crazy man. Like, I remember mm-hmm. learning when there was like, you know, you have your straight man and you have your crazy man. I was like, well, that's what I want to be. Like, I don't. That straight man thing is, you know, I'm done with it.
Yes.
So, but yeah, that's, I think, the one big change was kind of learning to kind of like, you know, you're going to get a few of these because I'm a nerd boy, but kind of like with the Hulk when it's like, you can't just turn into the Hulk. You have to wait for the right moment to unleash.
And that maybe even like a Jean Grey, too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit, she can't control it.
Yeah, well, that's more Phoenix. Jean knew what she was doing. She was like a
that's perfectionist. That's what I mean. but Jean struggled with that side of her.
Oh, yeah, but, you know.
So you've kind of railed it in. Used to be Phoenix.
Used to be Hulk.
Yeah,
yeah, and then I became like, you know, I don't know. Here, once again,
just
that
straight
nerd
up Xavier.
Shit, because I'm trying to find which, because you know you had Phoenix come back for a bit during X-Men versus Avengers.
Of course.
Phoenix is like a parasite, very similar to Venom. But anyway, yeah, I guess, you know.
And is Venom a symbiote?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good.
I like how, like, you thought you were, like, a syllable off, so you just symbiote.
Yeah. I know Sibian is something very different.
Very different. That's a different podcast.
That's a whole different podcast. Okay, so you feel like you've kind of just found a way to control it and not make everything about, like, I gotta say the funniest, craziest thing.
Well, yeah, I feel like I went through the phases I think almost every UCB student goes through, where you come in, especially if you did improv before, you have a style. And that was my style, and it crushed in short form. It's coming in with these big characters, usually doing like a big voice, being like a thug dude, or like, you know, or some kind of I was just a very big, and it's mostly because I'm a big dude, so like it amplifies when you do that on stage.
The audience honors you when you play something that feels true to a part of you.
And
that was happening for you.
What I feel your stage as a student goes is you take your first few classes, you're watching shows, and then you kind of suppress that and kind of try and be what you see. And I was a big convoy guy. And so, like, I got obsessed with trying to be, like, the smart improviser and all that. And, like, one, there's two things against me. One, I'm not nowhere near as smart as any of those three.
Me neither.
Maybe Todd. No. I don't know. Todd's going to be like, you can get these hands. He's going to slide in the DMs with his hands. No, Todd is super smart.
He really is. Great beard.
But yeah, like I'm not as smart as any of those guys. And then on top of that, it's like that's their comedy because they're smart dudes. Like they're like it just comes natural to them. And I was this kind of like nerdy, you know, dude. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm an idiot, but like I'm not. The way that their brain works is different from me, but that's what I was trying to do. And funny enough is Todd was my 201 teacher. And I feel like, you know, he I kept getting that note. It's funny how like you keep getting this note and like you don't get it until you finally figure it out. And then you're like, oh, that's what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the note was that I just wasn't playing real. And I think I just never got it. And it was because I was so busy trying to be an improviser that I wasn't. I was trying to be that because I looked up to those guys. I wanted to be like this convoy style improviser. And I feel like that's one of your first phases is like you're trying to be the improvisers you look up to. And 401 is where they try and help you find your voice. And eventually, you know, I got to the point where I was like, oh, I just need to implement my style, but I can be smarter, thinking at the top of your intelligence. I can be smarter about when I blow up. And then I found things that, like, it's funny when, like, you're a crazy person who seemed like they were normal at first and, like, different kind of moves like that versus just coming out the door, guns a-blazing, you know?
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, building up to crazy, you know, heightening, you know? Like, using that to my advantage to do something I was already pretty good at because that was, you know, whether I liked it or not, that was my comedic voice. It just wasn't developed. It wasn't, you know, refined. So then I eventually found that. And then you find a team that complements that, you know, white women. I love that I have Ronnie, who I feel like is one of the strongest straight men that I've seen.
It's so funny you should say that because while you're saying stuff, I'm literally in my head being like, I want to be that severe straight man like Ronnie is to everybody.
Yeah.
Even though he crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He's fucking crazy. Oh, I used one. go ahead. And then go ahead.
But yeah, so like then like you get to play with it. Like, it's so funny because I find that this is the same in improv and stand-up, where people watch either a stand-up or an improv team take the rules and bend them and play with them and, like, do – and then so young you'll go to an indie show and you'll see right. these, like, improvisers trying to do those moves. But it's like you can't bend rules you've not yet understood
totally.
Yet. And you see – and they're like, oh, why doesn't it work? And I've coached teams and told them that. Where yeah. it's like you're trying to bend these rules, but you're not even – like, you haven't grasped them yet. Because – and especially, like, if you take a class with Billy Merritt, he loves going on, like, you know, he'll – take you down memory lane and mm-hmm. let you know where his team was thinking to get where they went. And mm-hmm. and it usually is you've done a style or form for so long that you get bored as a performer, and so you're finding ways to test it. So it's not like right out the gate you're like, let's mm-hmm. be weird. You're like, no, we've mastered this. This is boring to us now. What can we do to make it fun for us?
And yeah. You know. Students hate to hear that.
Yeah.
Like, they hate to hear, like, no, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
We're like, we're learning a whole theory here. They're, to keep this analogy up, they're very yeah. Logan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, look, I like, we're going to get there yeah. and they're like, I want to be there now
yeah.
and they fucking pull out their claws. Oh, I gotta come all the way down. So that brings me to a good point. I want to ask you about, like, and it's such, and maybe as a question you maybe answer too much, so how is it playing with white women versus other improv teams?
That's actually not like a question I get a lot. I feel like the question I get a lot is like, how did we come up with the name? But like, this question is a very interesting and good one. I feel like improv is a very like white thing. Like,
it's very, absolutely. It's a very, and it's a sport of privilege.
I mean, even if we want to go into like these discussions, like, I know one of the big arguments was the lack of diversity in UCB New York. Mm-hmm. And like, I was talking about it with other black improvisers from UCB New York, and we were talking about how it's probably because a lot of, if you're black and you want to do comedy in New York, you're just going to do stand-up, because a lot of our heroes come from a background of stand-up. Even mm-hmm. like our SNL sketch heroes came from stand-up.
Yeah.
And so it's not that in vogue as a black person to want to go take improv. And I think obviously that's going to change with like your Key and Peele mm-hmm. and, you know, stuff like that. But at the, you know, I feel like we're starting from the interest. Now, that does not absolve, you know, a organization making the effort to get more people of color or mm-hmm. different stories, LGBTQ and all that
yeah.
involved. But that does mean that it's not just, you know, a big force just being like, we don't want no blacks allowed. It's just it's just like, you know, especially I remember one story was they were saying how like they would take the class and they stopped taking the class because they didn't like being the only black person there. And it's right. like, well, that continues the problem because now that is one less black person in the class.
It's a bummer.
But still, it's your prerogative to do what makes you feel comfortable. I'm not saying anyone is in the wrong here. Please leave my mentions alone.
Right. But you're you saying know. It do take nerve.
Yeah, yeah. but basically, because of that, I feel like a lot of us, and I feel like a lot of the black people who do improv are kind of like what I've started calling alternative black. Because, you know, we chose improv, you know, we also listen to Kid Talk wear chucks and like wearing plaid, you know. Like, lots of times, you know, you'll have that.
That is so true.
But we still haven't left our blackness behind. But so all that. Basically, the reason I said all that is I feel like when you play with white improvisers, that's the side that you're tapping into. Like, I'm tapping in to my, like, upbringing, listening to Linkin Park, because we're making all these references. I know, that's the band, Linkin Park. I was really into Linkin Park. But that's the side, because that's the common point of reference
totally.
Between you and a white improviser.
You have to find a base reality
exactly.
that they know about and mm-hmm. you know about
yes.
Linkin Park.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you get to play with white women, you get to tap this whole other side that
yeah.
That we've never tapped before, which is like our black side that most people might know about, might not know about, you know, like we, you know, referencing, you know, just the foods that we've eaten, the shows that we watch, like I feel like a common, like, fun joke in improv is referencing like a super old, like very deep cut TV or musical reference.
Yes.
And now you can do that on the black side where you like enter a scene as Chingy and like really like it's really to make the white women guys laugh. Like sometimes the audience are like, what? I feel like a lot of people know who Chingy was. He blew up pretty big.
I hear you a lot. I don't. Keep going. And then I'll say I feel that way when I get to play with queer improvisers of like we get to play in this world that I would never initiate if I was just playing with my more straight male friends.
Well, yeah, because it's like it is like it's so funny because like I don't know if you experience this the same way, but like sometimes I'll go to like a big black event, like a black event, and you tap this side of you that, you know, tends to be on vacation most of the time, and you're like, oh like this is a part of me. And so I feel like it's the same way on stage where it's like, oh man, I can finally do this stuff. And I feel like it, like, you know, it also makes playing with your other teams easier again because you get to tap both sides so you feel more complete as an improviser.
I like that. Yeah, because I feel sometimes I've struggled with is like in an effort to fit the base reality or in an effort to be a better player to my team, I forget how I'm unique, which ironically is not a service to the team. Like how you're unique actually helps the team. You have to bring you to the show every time. So I agree. Yeah, like sometimes like remembering who you are in that situation is like it's not going to mess up the scene to react how you want to react.
Yeah. Look, if we're going to get any fan art for this episode, I really like Mufasa talking to me in mono saying, remember who you are. You know?
I love that so much. Yeah, got to remember who we are.
Yeah.
Hey there, long-form listener. It's me, Matt Walsh. Yes, the Matt Walsh of the UCB4. I'm speaking right now into your ears. Right now. Is this weird? It's a little, yeah. Well, you want to listen to something less weird? Then check out the UCB Sports and Leisure Podcast, the show where we conduct hard-hitting interviews with some of today's best sportsmen and relaxers, from baseballers to Bjork. Sometimes they're real celebrities, but usually they're UCB improvisers doing great impressions. Subscribe to the UCB Sports and Leisure Podcast on iTunes for more of me talking right into your ear. And then it might feel less weird, but no promises.
Hey, improv fans, if the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information, and be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
So, okay, so I love that side. I feel like you and white women have been so successful in literally inspiring the children to do that thing and play how you want to play.
Yeah.
Something I want to ask about now is now that you've had a lot of success here at UCB, how do you see UCB influencing or continuing to be a part of your life, or if it's going to continue to be a part of your life as you pursue other career goals?
Well, I feel like the one thing that inspired me to take UCB from the beginning as I like learn more about it and just kind of coming up and seeing it is there's the closing of the cycle. I feel like people come up through UCB, get far in their careers, and then offer opportunities to younger comedians. And and I feel like that's what has made UCB so successful is that, you know, when you get that, like, you know, casting call for this, like, Adult Swim or you know, CBS or whatever show, and you realize one of the EPs or one of the creators is from UCB,
yeah,
and probably. And it's not even, it may not even be them directly, but the fact that they came to the theater and was like, hey, give me, like, I got this role for, like, a black person. I got this role for an Indian woman. I got mm-hmm. this role for, you know, a non-binary character. Can mm-hmm. you reach out to the school and get me those people?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's a perfect cycle because it then inspires people to continue down the course of the school. It inspires people from the outside looking in. They'll hear these stories on podcasts or whatever, mm-hmm. and they'll want to go to the school, and we just kind of self-sustain as a community. And I feel like, you know, sometimes it can seem so big that we don't think we're a community, but mm-hmm. we are. Whenever I'm on a gig or, you know, at a party or something and someone mentions like UCB and we realize we're both from UCB, we connect on that level, you mm-hmm. know, that deep. So I feel like, yeah, that's the next step I'd want to do is like in a show that maybe I'm staffing, which I've already kind of done in similar. I was working on this one show and they were asking about like getting talent and they're like talking about Craigslist and stuff. I was like, no, actually there's a whole school of people that are going to be way better than some people you'll find on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Check this out. And like, I took them to the talent page and I think that's, you know, that's the next step. Like after you feel like, cause, you know, I love after like, you know, the theater has given me a platform to play with white women and, mm-hmm. you know, I get to play there. They're, you know, allow me to tape my stand up album there. Like I'm getting that. So now I think my part is to give back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. You're about to you've already done stand up on the UCB show.
Yeah.
But now you're about to record an album on UCB stage.
Yeah. That is what I wanted to do, like, ever
since. Isn't that
crazy? Yeah, because I used to be an intern, and when you're an intern and you have time to kill, like, maybe someone already took the in-show spot,
mm-hmm.
and so you have to just kind of stay at the front. Like, sometimes you get bored, and you're just looking at all the albums, and a lot of those albums were taped at Franklin. You know, Paul F. Tompkins, Impersonal, I know, of course, I'm blanking, but there's like
some
just
good Maria, you know, Bamford one.
That's who I was going to say, but I wasn't sure. Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
Like tons of like great comedians that I look up to.
Yeah.
Use that stage to do their special. And so that's also like my first special was a lot of like tributes. You know,
yeah.
My first tribute is calling it the Community College Dropout for my man Kanye.
That's awesome.
You know, hands up. You know, he's coming back to us too, so it's all working out.
Yeah.
And then like my second tribute is to this theater. Like I wanted to do it here, which I was afraid because I wanted specifically in Franklin. I feel like the sound for a stand-up album is better in Franklin,
yeah.
And Franklin's the hot one, so it's kind of hard
yeah.
to get it. But you know, we were able to work it out, and you know, I'll only get like one shot. Which mm-hmm. is fine, because I get to do it where I want, you know.
Yeah.
Because
you only need one shot.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
You will be absolutely amazing. Yeah. You've killed on that stage with only one shot before.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
that's
what I mean?
That's what I'll tell myself. Thanks.
It's just another
yeah,
show.
It really is.
Yeah.
It like I think that's some good imparting advice to anyone who's listening and grinding. Yeah, everything just turns out to be one show. Like, speaking of, like, great shows on that stage, Put Your Hands Together has always been my favorite mm-hmm. show. I'd go there, hang out, look up at all the comics, and, like, the lineup was always, like, this long list of people.
Yeah.
Even till this day, long list of people I look up to in the stand-up world. And, like, I just, like, submitted a tape, and I got the show, and I was just freaking out. And I was like, oh, my gosh,
yeah.
I got to make sure it's the best set because it's going to go on the podcast. And then you do it, and you finish it, and you're like, oh, that was just another show. You know,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't take anything away from that, but it just, at the end of the day, it's just another show that you've done, and the hunger will always be there. You will
yeah.
always want to do more.
How has your growth in stand-up affected your growth in improv and vice versa?
Ooh, big time. It's one of the things that, like, a lot of stand-ups who will talk to me and sometimes be like, should I do improv? I've been thinking about it. And I'm like, yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
They feed into each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll take improv and it'll feed into stand-up because it'll make it easier and more comfortable to do crowd work. Like a lot of times people, it makes it so much easier to be loose too and just riff. I feel like when you start doing stand-up, you have your material, and like I'll see it with younger comics when I'm on a show or a mic with them, and you see like they treat their jokes like a script, and that's what they'll do. And you'll even see like sometimes the reactions are scripted. Like you could tell like they plan to react that way. And that's just how you make it through, because you're like, this I know is funny to me. This I'm going to do on stage. But then, you know, some audiences will just see it. Like it's easy to see where it's like, oh, you, that was all planned. But then you do improv and you get more loose, and then you just have your premise and your jokes and your punchline, and you just get up there and you're kind of just riffing, and then you'll kind of bring something you riffed with an audience member back into a joke. You'll, because your brain's already in that improv mode where you're thinking on the fly, and you're just like, it's more, it's less of just this kind of like calculated 1 + 1 = 2 and more advanced where it's like, okay, since this last equation had this, I'm going to carry it over to that and throw it in there. And the way stand-up has helped improv is like, when now that improv kind of fuels that same kind of quick thinking with like jokes, and then that kind of translates to making it easier to be on the sidelines and be like, what's the funniest thing that I can help push this game? What's the funniest move to help advance or heighten? It helps you with that because your joke brain is there without making just a joke that serves yourself. You're able to look at this scene, this game, and go, okay, this joke will push this game forward and be real funny, and jump out and do it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, but it was, you know, it took a while to get there because, you know, while I was in the middle of taking classes, a lot of times I'll be doing a lot of stand up and feeling confident. And then I'll do the joke thing where I'll come in and I'll say something and it's funny, but it doesn't really advance the game. It's just a funny thing.
It's a joke, not a gift.
And you feel like an idiot. Like you really do, because you come out because you feel confident at the laugh. And then when you realize that you've done nothing to advance the scene, you just, well, I'm out here now and I said my funny thing and I didn't really establish who I am.
You got to get a phone call and return to the back line. Oh, I'm getting a call.
Oh, that's the classic. That's a classic.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm getting a call.
Oh, sorry. Well, I got to go.
Isn't that weird that the audience can smell inauthenticity from a mile away? This is kind of like adding to what you were talking about before of like in stand-up, but also in improv. Like when you're in, like when you're not being real, or when you're, the audience can smell it, like blood in the water. Like it's so wild to me, like how like you can try to outsmart the audience, but you kind of never will.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's like, it really is like the audience is so much smarter than you think. Like I say this a lot of times when people try and do like they'll do an improv scene that is offensive, and but they're not comfortable with it. And it's like, we see that from a mile away, and you'll make the audience uncomfortable. If you really are trying to say something with this offensive thing you're doing, then you have to commit. And when you commit, if the point you're making is strong enough, people will laugh. But when you start getting pussyfooted and just like, people see that, and then it makes them uncomfortable because now you're letting them know it's wrong. Like you're basically, anytime you falter on a risk, you're letting the audience know that you don't believe in the risk, and then they're going to take your cue and not believe in it, and it's going to fall flat on its face.
Totally. Tell us why it's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
And we both have unique experiences because we, I'm assuming, I know we comment on our experience sometimes in a way that, you know, could be seen as offensive, but sometimes we let the audience in.
Yeah.
I've let the audience in on some very questionable scene work where I'm where I'm playing like a cartoonish or a parody of a gay character.
Yeah.
And like, if done right, like you're letting them in on the joke, you're letting them in on the parody.
Oh, yeah, because like if done right, if you truly commit, they see the cartoonishness and know that you're making fun of it. Whereas like if you're pussyfooted and you're just kind of like, it's like, oh, are you trying to make fun of something? You know, are you trying to be offensive?
Yeah.
You know,
we know white women has had like, I'm going to go ahead and say like maybe all successes, but has there ever been a scene you can remember where you're like, F, we missed the mark on that?
You know, I think one of the there was a clear one that always sticks out in our memory where we did a scene where we were all playing like black women, but we were playing like ghetto black women, and we looked to the right, and like the whole like right side of the stage were like these like woke black queens, and we like totally start buckling and totally start like, you know, kind of like just easing up that commitment. And even at one point I was like, you know, are you black queens? And like, it just like, we just never won them back. Like we never. And it was so funny because like no one else knew what was going on. Tessa was like, oh, they're just doing funny stuff. But it was like, we got so obsessed with trying to win them over because we knew like they were like, fuck you, you know. But it was because we didn't commit, and I think like they kind of were okay with it, but it was just our own head getting into it, and then that turned them off about it, you know, and just like putting them on the
That's tough. Yeah, because you were like, I feel a part of this experience, but then again, when it came up, when it came to maybe women being there, you were like, uh-oh, I can't perfectly comment on this experience.
Well, I think it's also just, once again, giving your audience more credit, where it's like, we, instead of just following through with a bit, we felt the need to coddle them, you know? And I think that might have been what annoyed them more than anything, where it's like, oh, you think we can't just laugh at improv? You think we're just watching you? And it just, and it comes off as dudes who, like, you know, only date white women.
God bless. Well, I love that. I love to hear about like your growth in that way. And hey, you learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Some gentleman in that position would not have learned that same lesson, or even been self-aware enough to be like, "Oops, that's a little weird." So the time has just flown here with you, Iffy. And I'll to kind of close out, I want to ask, like, what goals in improv do you have that you haven't yet accomplished? Or like, what's next for you in improv?
Oh man, yeah, that's a
It might be nothing. Like literally, you could be like, no, have fun, or you know what I mean, something as simple as that. Because since you are so successful outside of the improv world, maybe your goal is just to keep having fun here. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like that's the like kind of like easy go-to one is like, yeah, to keep having fun at the theater. But I also want to do, I don't know, I feel like, and then maybe this is something from just like, you know, our generation, where like there's always these like golden age stories of improv where like a team or someone has done a form or some kind of show that just like you still hear talking about it. Like, you know, I think like, you know, the infamous version of that is, you know, I'm not going to blast anyone out because some of these people have blown up. But, you know, someone shitting on someone's chest on stage, you know, like nothing like that. But something that like just kind of is going to echo through the halls of UCB till the end of time. And, you know, I feel like a lot of that happened in New York, you know, when you hear like these swarm stories, and at the end of the day, it's stories people carry with them. Like there's some stories where you're like, oh, that happened. And someone's like, what? And then you get to tell that story. Personally, I feel like I haven't done a show or form yet that hits that. And I'm willing now that I feel like I'm, because we tried it early on in White Women. Like when we first started, we tried doing like our own form, like I think it was called like Hood News or something like that. And like, you know, if we would have had the patience and time to develop it, it would have been great. But I feel like when you're starting out, you're getting, you know, just these indie shows, and it's really not a space to work out because you're really just trying to be the best performer you are to kind of like really make waves, I feel, on the indie scene. So I'd really like to revisit that and really start exploring fun ways to do improv that people might not have necessarily already thought of that will be like, oh.
That's a great point. That might be the right time to revisit it now that you've gone through.
Yeah.
You're a little closer to Xavier at this point. You know what I mean? Now it's like, yes, here you go.
I'm very far from Xavier. I'd say I'm close to Scott.
I mean, I'm toad over here, so you're doing great. Iffy, it was so fun to get to talk to you. I could talk to you forever.
I know, that was a blast.
It was so fun. And we stayed away from, like, being a total bummer.
Yeah.
Look at us.
I know. There's going to be that podcast where it's like, I started improv because my family, they left me. They left me on the steps of UCB in New York. Like, I just woke up as a baby.
That's kind of an amazing story. Yeah. Well, stay tuned. We never know who, you know, maybe if he's interviewing that person on the future podcast.
I feel real bad about joking about it.
I can't wait for Improv Batman.
Yeah.
Well, guys, that was a long form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Iffy Wadaway, I said it, will be your host. Thank you, UCB. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, everybody who's even listening to this. And as always, don't think.
Yeah. Do not.
Do not.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.